Welcome to the ION Annapolis Local Business Spotlight. There are thousands of locally owned businesses in the area, some small and some large. Some you may know and others you don't. But one thing they all have in common is a great story, and we want to share it with you. Join us every Saturday as we talk to the founders, the owners, and the managers of local businesses you have come to know and love, and those you will come to know and love. Now here's your host, John Frenay, with this week's Local Business Spotlight.
Every time I investigate a new place, I say it's like one of the most beautiful spots in Annapolis, but I think I got it this time. I'm going to describe where we are, and then I'm going to tell you where we are. But we're on a corner office overlooking Back Creek, overlooking the Ellen Moyer Park at the Annapolis Maritime Museum and Park. I see ospreys that are back, which is a great sign of spring. And I'm looking across the desk at John Stefanchek, who is the executive director of the Marine Trades Association of Maryland. How are you?
I'm well.
Let's talk about the Marine Trades Association. And the website you want to go to check it out is mtam.org. What is the Marine Trades Association? It's so kind of mysterious.
I mean, the generic, if you looked up the dictionary, it's a trade organization, right? We represent interests of the recreational boating industry in Maryland.
Okay. Now, when you say recreational boating, I mean, I know when we look at the boat shows, we've got the sailboat show and the powerboat show. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you say recreational boating, what all does that include? Does that include, is it just powerboats, which is typically where my mind goes for recreational boating? Or does it include sailing and paddlecraft? Or
a little bit of everything. We're lucky in Annapolis. More than 90% of boating in North America is powerboats. It's only about 10% that sail. However, the Annapolis Sailboat Show is the largest event of its kind in the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, there's a tidbit.
Yes, it is. That's why several languages are spoken within the show. That's something that truly makes Annapolis special. But the Chesapeake Bay is also home to many marinas and boatyards. Maryland, especially. Maryland has more than 330 of them. I looked it up once because in my other life, I produced a guide to the Intracoastal Waterway, and I had to count the number of facilities from along the eastern seaboard. The Chesapeake Bay has as many boatyards and facilities as you'll find from New Jersey to Maine coastally.
Wow, that's great. I mean, I've heard, and I don't know whether this is true, or maybe you know this, but I've heard that Maryland's coastline in the Chesapeake Bay, when mm-hmm. you consider the Atlantic and the Chesapeake Bay and the tributaries and everything else that go in there, is one of, if not the longest coastlines in the states.
It's the longest in the United States.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. Because there's no other place like it. There's deep navigable water and there's shallow knee-deep water for many, many, many miles. I mean, like the Patuxent River alone is 110 miles long within the state. We don't have that big of a state. That's really long.
It's true. So when you talk about marine trades in Maryland, are we talking about just the Chesapeake Bay and the tributaries, obviously?
And Maryland's coast.
Okay, so you're out in
Ocean City.
You're representing the interest of the Ocean City. And
that's right. And we're quickly becoming a very big player coastally with things like the White Marlin Tournament. It's the biggest fishing tournament, I think, on the Atlantic.
You know, when Michael Jordan rolls his plane in here to fish in it, you know it's got something going on.
Yep. And there's a brisk business of boat sales and also the marinas that are there.
Well, it's such a huge driver to the economy of Maryland. And I mean, I know you overlap certainly with tourism and everything else. But I mean, when you get down to it, when it's involving the water, mm-hmm. be it the Chesapeake Bay or the Atlantic Ocean or the tributaries, it's huge. You look at, you know, you've got boat dealers and you've got everything that goes along with it.
You've got boat dealers, you've got boat yards, you've got marina resorts, you've got service companies that are mobile, that are operating on their own venues, that do things from detailing to electronics repair to what have you. You've got installers, you've got people that do offshore training and inshore training, you've got marine lenders and brokers, you've got surveyors, and then you have independent brokers who just buy and sell used boats. That's just off the top of my head.
I was going to say, that seems to be skimming this. I mean, do you get into like bait and tackle?
We have some. Most of the bait and tackle places are They also do hunting, and they do fishing supplies. I wish I had more of them, frankly, because fishing's the number one outdoor activity in the United States.
And certainly didn't get any smaller with COVID.
No.
That's for sure. Well, I think that, you know, as you look at it, I mean, there's so many different ancillary industries, if you will, or businesses that are here. I mean, I look here, we're in Port Annapolis Marina, okay? We have a resort, if you will, for lack of a better word. We have a marina. We've got repair facilities. We have yacht sales. We've got used sales. We've got new sales. We've got a fantastic baker.
A really fantastic baker. Let me tell you what it's like to go there once a week.
Yeah. I did it once, and I said, never again, just because I'm trying to lose the weight.
I'm going in the opposite direction.
And I came. I walked down here one other time, and the line was too long, and I said, good. I don't have the patience to wait in line, nor did I need that market bun, so I'm just going to go home. And
yeah, really. Well, you were speaking towards the economic impact in Maryland. The economic impact of boating and boating industry in Maryland is more than $4 billion per year.
That's with a B. That's huge.
That's really big. To say nothing of the fact that the Chesapeake Bay is... So I have a whole bunch of friends and associates that are on in Maryland tourism. And what they've told me is that's the number one driver of why people come to Maryland.
I would think so. I mean, let's face it. I mean, not to diss on Ocean City, but there's plenty of other much nicer beaches to go to. There's probably some less crowded and nicer different boardwalks within driving range here. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me that the bay is... you know, a huge driver. I mean,
that's right. You can walk on the boardwalk at North Beach.
Yeah, true.
Right down in southern Anne Arundel County.
True. And, you know, I mean, we've got the Thomas Point Lighthouse. You've got, you know, certainly the everything that the Bay Bridge has, the swim that comes there. You've got the
Bay Paddle.
Yeah.
You've got the Maryland Seafood Festival over there. Particularly excited about the fact that you can now go to Thomas Point Lighthouse and, which is a screw pile lighthouse. And did you know screw pile lighthouses only exist here on the Chesapeake Bay?
I do know that. I've had many, many conversations with John Potvin.
Have you?
And been out there several times. And I talked to so many people on the Thomas Point Shoal Lighthouse. And I've been out with Dave Gendell and everything else. But I'm like, they're like, oh my gosh, but it was $80. I said, this will be the best $80 you spend.
Yep.
I said, you will go out there, you will lose all sense of where you are in the middle of the bay. You'll realize what it was like for these lightkeepers to be out there. And I said, that is an $80 bill that you will never regret.
And then forget it.
Yeah.
My father worked for the tour boat company as doing their lighthouse tours, where he would dress up as a lighthouse keeper. And they would take you out there. This is before it opened up. Which is pretty cool when you consider that my grandmother on my mother's side was friends with the daughter of the lighthouse keepers at Drum Point, down at the mouth of the Patuxent.
Okay, you sound like you've got an incredible history in the area.
Well, I think it's sort
You're
of
a river rat.
This is always what that's my email. My wife's email address is River Rat.
Ray Weaver lived up in Pasadena. He's he calls himself that too. He's over in He's in Denmark now, I think.
Oh, yeah?
He lives over there with his wife. But
that's my Instagram, too. It's Severn River Rat, because I live off the Severn River. But
there you are. Well, I mean, so you lived here, grown here, and settled here and everything else all your life.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in Severna Park, and I lived in a community off the Severn River. I live in the same community I grew up in, and several of my friends do, too, because we boat all the time.
And it doesn't sound like it's a surprise to me that you would be involved with the Marine Trades Association as a...
Well, it's near and dear to my heart. I mean, for several reasons. I've been on the board of the Marine Trade since 2004.
Okay.
So I've been active in it. And I just became the director. And we're coming up on a year in April 2023.
Well, congratulations on that. Well, one of the big things that you guys do is, I mean, plastered all over your website, we advocate for recreational use of the water.
Yep.
Legislative. I mean, you jump into what's going on right now as we're speaking over at the State House.
Yep.
Every year. And I mean, there's always something with the Chesapeake Bay being such a focus of Maryland that there's got to be always something that is always going on that you've got to keep your eye on and your thumb on.
All the time. All the time. And it runs the gamut from rockfish regulations to the building of piers, as the Maryland Department of Environment sees it, from boating fees to the creation of maritime heritage areas to the right to work legislation, which is also nationally on people being able to work on their outboard engines themselves, to commercial driver's licenses so boat dealers can haul boats around the bay. I mean, you can go on all day long.
These guys, I swear they go into the state house and they just think up stuff to like futz with.
That's a guy I used to work for. He used to say, there ought to be a law. Like everybody wants to make a law about something. Yeah, well, that's not always the solution. You know, find better ways to do what you should already be doing.
I agree. And as you mentioned, just rolled off some of those things off the top of your head. I mean, you would think that some of them would be no-brainers, but, you know, I guess the legislature being what it is.
Well, and sometimes they just don't know. So one of the things that I'm very lucky to be involved with an organization that has pretty good street cred. We had a director here for a very long time, Susan Zellers. She did a terrific job. She built the association into what it is. And I'm proud to take over from her. And one of the things that she did is she got to know people in the legislature. So if they had a question, they just called her and said, you know, is this, what do you think of this? What do you think of this, that, you know, the relationships that she built were really good for Maryland. They were really good for Maryland. Now she moved on, but she moved on at a time when the legislature turned over as well.
True.
So we're kind of starting from ground zero.
Which is good because, I mean, yes. You know, part of what you do is education.
Yep.
And certainly you educate people that are looking to be out on the water. But I would think a lot of it would be educating these young legislators that are coming in.
It depends. I mean, it's amazing to me. A few years ago, quite possibly the biggest thing that we ever did legislatively was we got the legislature to pass a cap on the tax on boats. That's our signature thing that we did. And that's because our competing states all have that. Florida caps it.
Virginia. So why wouldn't I go buy my boat in Florida?
People do it.
I know.
They buy the boat in Florida and they have it shipped up here. It doesn't cost as much as you think. Or they have a captain bring it up here. And the tax cap was such that it was prohibitive to buy it here in some cases. So anyways, we had this meeting with Mike Bush, Speaker of the House.
Right.
And I'll never forget, we were talking about all these maritime, it was kind of like this interview. We were talking about all things maritime in Maryland. And he was talking about, you know, what it's like to go boating in Baltimore. And I said, Speaker Bush, do you know there are more boat slips in Baltimore than there are in Annapolis? And he said, what? I said, as a matter of fact, there's more boat slips in Baltimore marinas than any other town on the Chesapeake Bay. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, because I used to write this book that I published, and I had to count the number, you know, how many slips are at each marina.
This marina has X slips,
yeah.
That marina has...
Yeah, and I said, so when you're doing things like passing the tax cap, you're helping people who buy boat, and they want to put it in Maryland. Because most people that buy boats are not wealthy. Most people that buy boats... are you probably passed them when you walked in here, 24 foot
sure.
Family boat, right? That's upwards of $200,000.
That's not chump change.
It's not chump change. And that family takes all of their money and they make the monthly payment and they put gas in it. But the biggest thing they put is with their kids and their dog, it's time. And that becomes the majority of their free money, their spending money and their free time. So boating is a humongous investment. So by passing this tax cap, we said to the speaker, you're actually helping people that are not wealthy, but they want to spend their time here in Maryland and they want to go boating.
You're improving their lifestyle. Bingo.
Great way to say it.
Well, you walk probably a tight line, and you talked about, you know, building piers and DNR and everything mm-hmm. else, but you probably walk a pretty tight line between recreational uses and environment. I mean, you know,
every day.
Because we can't ignore the environment. Mm-hmm. We, you know, because of the environment, it exists. Mm-hmm. Yet we do want to be out there. We do want to be out there water skiing and fishing and just power boating and picnicking.
Tubing and swimming and anchor. Nothing more fun than going to a cove with your picnic lunch, anchor and go swimming for the day.
Yeah.
And then stop. And it's so much fun. It's a matter of fact, it's in our mission. One significant part of our mission is commitment to clean water. Because I've said this for years, as soon as you can't swim in that water, people are going to stop using it. Even if they don't go swimming, even if they're not swimmers beforehand, they're going to be scared of it. So we need to make sure we keep it clean. And you have things like the environment's improving, so the bird populations are coming back. Like when I was a little kid, there were no bald eagles here. They're all gone, and now they're back. The other thing we didn't have that I've seen in the Severn River for the first time in my life, I'm 54, I've lived here my whole life. I never saw SAV, subaquatic vegetation, to the degree that we have it now. Like, it's massive grass beds. Well, there's all these critters living in the grass beds.
Sure, awesome.
It's terrific. Well, but it does pose some challenges. Some people don't like it because it wraps around your propeller and your powerboat, and you have to spend a significant amount of time clearing it off once you get the boat out of the grass beds.
Right.
The Maryland Department of Environment does not want you to put in shallow water moorings in the grass beds. It's not policy, but it's not good for the grass beds, and the grass beds are good for the environment. There's all kinds. There's something going on with MDE right now where they started asking commercial contractors, well, what kind of boat is the owner going to put at their pier?
One that floats. Okay, next question.
Right. So everybody's got, you know, let's keep our eye on the ball. We want to be smart about this. It's just like rockfish. You know, everybody's got another idea, and I am no expert on this at all. The fishing groups are experts on it. But people come out with all these reasons of, well, we should pass a law about this. We should pass a law about that. Even though people are already studying it every single day. So yeah, we do walk a fine line between.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the water quality is getting better. I mean, it goes up and down and everything else. But I mean, I know the Oyster Recovery Partnership has done some wonderful work with planting some reefs. You've got the reef balls that are being, you know, deposited there. I mean, that's great here. I mean, I've heard porpoises up in the Upper Severn.
So they've fallen fish. And that's amazing. The other thing I've never seen is porpoises in the Upper Severn. I sail on Round Bay once a week, every Wednesday night. And when we saw porpoises there, we all looked at each other and said, never.
What's in that bottle?
Right. Yeah, really. What's in the bottle? Well, they're chasing bait fish. That's why the porpoises are coming up there. And I don't know whether that's good or bad. Does that mean that they can't find the bait fish in the main body of the bay?
Or there's better feeding up here.
Or there's
less
more
competition.
Of them. Maybe so.
But I do love the way that a lot of our businesses, and certainly you know, the folks that are memberships of the Marine Trades Association, do care about that. I mean, I've been out on whether it be the Woodman or actually the Maritime Museum's Wilma Lee several times, and always without hesitation, the captains will stop and get a hook and get crap that somebody threw out in the bay just to bring it up.
Oh, it's amazing.
You know, and to put that, I mean, you know, Baltimore's got their trash wheel, Mr. Trash Wheel, which is doing a great job. I mean, it's kind of funny and kind of a goof, but it's amazing what they're picking up. But you go out on a sail and you realize what kind of a great resource that we have, and then all of a sudden, you know, people are crapping it up. And I do love that people really do care for it. And they're out there, they're picking, you know, okay, well, here's somebody's, you know, rings from their sodas or, you know, the beer cans in it and everything else. They just throw it back into the boat and say it's much easier just to throw it away on land.
A few years ago, sailboat racing organizers started this thing where they called clean regattas, where they tried to limit the amount of, you know, make a smaller carbon footprint when you go sailing. You used to see it a lot more, John. You see people throw trash in the water. It's less and less.
Which is a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Another angle that you guys work on is education. And I know that you've recently had safety at sea seminars. You know, in addition to the clean water that we have to be able to recreate in, we need to make sure that we're all safe when we do it, too. So, I mean, this is an education thing. Is this for your members only, or is this for the public?
It's for the public.
Okay.
And it serves several different purposes. So, safety at sea seminars are hosted across the country. They're administrated by U.S. Sailing. They tell you what you need to have. But they were founded at the Naval Academy after the 1979 Fastnet race incident, which there was a significant loss of life, and the boats and the sailors were not necessarily prepared for it. And so some smart people who worked at the academy and ran Navy sailing said, we're gonna start these safety classes. And it promulgated all across the country. And what we do is we administrate it for Navy sailing.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. And so the Navy midshipmen take it. Some of the volunteers who are the chaperones on the Navy sailing boats, mm-hmm. they take it. Members of the public take it because if they're doing a regatta, such as Annapolis to Newport or Newport to Bermuda, the race organizers require it that you have to have this training. So there's different levels. There's like a basic one that's one day. That's what's called the offshore sailing certificate. There's a two-day one, which is called the International Offshore Safety at Sea Certificate. There's one for cruising, where if you want to, maybe you're retired and you want to go cruising and you don't think you have enough training, you can take a two-day class right alongside with the people who are earning racing certificates, and you can get just about the same amount of training with a slightly different certificate. And we invite members of the general public to come watch the demonstrations that the Navy and Coast Guard do in the river on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So they're showing you how, you know, if something happens, what are they demonstrating? If something happens, here's how you get out of it?
Basically, yeah. Here's how you retrieve somebody from the water if they fall in the water. Here's what happens when you deploy a life raft and you climb into it. Here's what happens if you have to light off a flare to signal rescue personnel. And then the big treat is a Coast Guard helicopter from Coast Guard Station Cape May flies over, weather permitting.
Sure.
And they do an actual, they pick a person up off of a boat or off of the water and bring them into the helicopter.
I get the alerts all the time about the helicopters that are picking seamen off of some of the cargo ships
yep.
that come up the bay that they've either fallen or they've yep. become ill or whatnot. And it's pretty impressive what the Coast Guard does and can do.
Oh, those are superheroes. Those guys are super, and girls are superheroes.
True. Well, it's talking about cruising and stuff like that. I did a podcast recently with Matt Korbelak, who did the Great Loop, in his little Sea Bear boat, and went.
Oh, I went to his thing at the
up at the library the other week. Yeah, it was a fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating story. I was there. I was excited to see the pictures because he didn't have them already when we spoke. When he talked just after he got back, and the big welcome here to Annapolis. Well, in addition to education, you are membership, right? And that is businesses and organizations that have the interest in the marine trades.
It is almost all businesses. And there are some organizations like Severn River Keeper, the Maryland Tourism Coalition.
Okay.
There's a Super Yacht Association. I don't know if you look out the window in the mouth of the Severn River, you'll see a whole lot more super yachts
right.
than you did years ago. Their association,
none of which are mine, by the way.
We love them. They're good. You know, this we've got the best cruising grounds on the planet, so we love it when they come here to visit.
My funny story with somewhat super yachts. I was at the Ebb Tide when it was the Ebb Tide.
Yep.
And I'm sitting here, and this guy next to me looks familiar, and I'm going. I said, "No, it can't be." And I finally, about 40 minutes of looking at him, I go, "You, Steve Forbes."
Oh, really?
And he says, yeah. And so we got into this big conversation. We bought each other beers. And my family up in North Jersey lived about a mile down the road from where his father's estate was.
Uh-huh.
So we talked a little bit about his father and the ballooning and the whole nine yards. And it was a fun night. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, here I am in the Ebb Tide. And I am the only person on a Saturday night that knows that arguably one of the wealthier people in the world
yep.
is sitting right here at the end of the bar. And so we roll out at midnight, and I'm looking out. I said, okay, so let me get this straight. I said, I'm going to assess whether I'm sober enough to drive home, and I may walk home. And you're going to call for a car and go back to your $300 million yacht. And
did he come on his yacht?
We'll never see any. He was here doing something at the academy.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we'll never see each other again. He says, oh, you've got the concept down. Your math is off, but your concept's right. And I'm like, my night could not be any more perfect.
That's terrific. What a good story.
than this. But I do love to see these large yachts that do come in town. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is, I know there's a lot that goes along with that as far as, you know, you talk about into the economy. I mean, you know, they're refueling and they're, reprovisioning. And
well, there are companies here that do voyage planning for super yachts. And then also some of the operators that we have here, like Oasis Marinas, they're a big right. marina operator. They're the ones who put the wharf back together in Washington, D.C. and turned it into a yachting destination.
Right.
Where it was kind of, I don't want to say deteriorating, but it wasn't a super yacht. You couldn't get
No, nobody yacht. Went down there.
Yeah. And now you can. And it's a bona fide, like that's a good trip for a super yacht is to go up the Potomac River and go all the way to D.C.
Or better, best location in the world of getting to D.C.
It's pretty neat. And you don't have to be a super yacht. You can have a 34-foot, you know, trawler.
Sure.
Do it too. But more and more, you're going to start seeing more and more super yachts on the Chesapeake Bay because the infrastructure's here now. And it's, particularly if you come in the fall, it's some of the best cruising grounds, I say, in the planet.
You've got a job board on your website as well. So, I mean, which is for folks that are looking for jobs in the industry. And again, I want to go back on that. I mean, there's just so many different arms and tentacles. It's like an octopus of the industry. I mean, you know, we look at, okay, South River and the, oh gosh, what's it?
Oh, Cat South, the technical program.
You know, has
yep, they have a boating tech program.
Marine repair.
Yep.
If you just walk down Edgewood Road, you'll see absolutely everything that possibly, you know, could be associated with boating.
Well, almost. We have it in Baltimore, too, because Baltimore is the original and predated Annapolis in terms of that was ground zero for boating, and it still is. There's generational businesses there in the Middle River area and Back River areas of Baltimore. We also have them in Annapolis. You'll also find them in places like Kent Narrows and Oxford. You'll find bona fide shipwrights in Oxford. And we have the only shipwright apprenticeship program in Maryland at the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum in St. Michael's.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll find Baltimore, it's commercial, but Baltimore Harbor is the second largest port on the East Coast of the United States for roll-on, roll-off cargo.
Second to who? Savannah?
It is a southern port, but I can't remember which one it is. For roll-on, roll-off, I believe it's Savannah. It has to do with the rail cars that are here, which is a whole other story. But we love them, too. Many of the ship pilots in Baltimore are recreational boaters.
Sure. Why wouldn't they be?
I talk to them all the time and at events, and it's really interesting to get their perspective. So one of our programs that we do for members is, and I want to talk about workforce development. Cause that's
okay, absolutely.
But for shrink wrap, what we do is we work with Chesapeake Plastics. They help us work with our members who buy shrink wrap recycling bags. They take the shrink wrap off of their customers' boats. They bundle it in this recycling bag. Then we drive around the springtime, pick it all up, and we take it to a recycler in Halethorpe. And they give us a little bit of money, and it's a fundraiser for marine trades.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And otherwise it just ends up in a landfill and sits around there for hundreds of euros, and these guys have figured a way to grind it up or melt it down or something or other.
Turn it into, you know, lumber, fake lumber. Yeah. And starboard. You know,
I bought a pair of shoes recently from a company in Annapolis called Made Plus. It's a fairly new sneaker company they kill me for calling it a sneaker company. They call it a non-athletic shoe, but a lifestyle shoe or something like that.
Right.
But it's made out of recycled water bottles.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds, you know, I'm picturing like cutting the end off of a, you know, a Dasani bottle and, you know, jamming your foot in there. But they're some of the most comfortable shoes I've ever worn.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're going to pay to get rid of the shrink wrap as trash, or you can pay to get rid of it as recycling. And I maintain that if you let your customers choose, they pay that $15 for that bag to recycle their shrink wrap from their boat.
Well, I would think everybody that's working that, you know, that would have the need for a shrink wrap, that is a boat owner, that is going to be very conscious of the environment.
Many are.
They're not all Rodney Dangerfield. They're not all Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield's my favorite boater. But in addition to that, so that's a member benefit that we do. You know, along with things like events that we produce. We do 4 events a year for members. Then we produce the Safety at Sea. That's for the general public. But we also, one of the biggest things that we do, about a third of what we do, is workforce development. So we create a pipeline to get young people into the marine trade and place them in 6-week internships with
members.
Our members.
Sure.
And we help the member offset the cost of that because it's a paid internship. And we do all this through a grant with Maryland Department of Labor.
Well done.
Yeah, it's really a fantastic thing because the goal is to get young people into marine trades like they would any other trade. Like if they want to be an electrician or a carpenter or a plumber, whatever. And they get acquainted with it, they learn about it, and then most of these kids stick.
I've got to think that this has got to be a huge benefit to your members, because certainly in this market that we are in right now, finding good help is difficult. And here you've got a ready, willing, and able pool of people that are willing to take on the next generation. I mean, face it, you know, you're not going to be sitting at this desk in 30 years from now, hopefully.
Hope not.
I mean, you know, maybe I, you know, I'm not sure I'll be walking in 30 years from now. But, you know, so we've got to do that. And I find that a lot of the younger people, for a while, the schools, and I don't want to crap on the schools, but they're all focused on must go to college. And, you know, let's go white collar, let's get the whole nine yards. But if you're worried about money and supporting a family and everything else, boy, there's plenty of opportunity that way as well as without that.
Isn't that the truth?
And you don't have the college bills.
I was just gonna say the return on investment, especially I'm a liberal arts major. It's just not there necessarily if you decide to go into a trade and then you don't incur that debt. The good thing about the marine trades is the vast majority of it is they'll teach you why you work. They'll train you to become an engine mechanic. They'll train you to become electronics tech. They'll train you in composites or rigging. And my rigging members have said there's a desperate need for riggers. So my big idea was, well, why don't we make Annapolis like the center of the sailing industry to come here and learn how to be riggers? I say this because the city of Annapolis is also working under a grant to train people and attract young people.
And I've got to think that when you come in and do an apprentice, as opposed to doing a class, okay, let's talk about Cat South, okay? They can teach you how to, you know, change the spark plugs on the engines and, you know, do whatever they need to do and repair fiberglass and so on and so forth. But there's a lot of stuff that experience teaches you. That when you go into a company that maybe, say, they specialize, maybe they're a maintenance, doing maintenance for a particular brand of boat that they sell, and there's just a little something that a mechanic that's worked there for 20 years mm-hmm. knows. Mm-hmm. And it's a shortcut. Not to make it cheaper or anything like that, but it's just, when it makes this noise, don't worry about all that troubleshooting. Go right here first. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get these young kids, and I'm starting to sound like an old fart, but that's where you get the young adults that are coming in there mm-hmm. that are learning this, and they're learning from their older people that are going to be able to take over for them.
Sorely needed. I watched when I first started. I got into this business in 2000. I started on the Board of the Marine Trades in 2004. I was the youngest person in the room for a lot of years. And to watch the shift to younger people coming in through things like our internship program. There's no apprenticeship program yet. It's internships.
Right.
There probably will be an apprenticeship program. We're working towards it. Some of those marine companies I was talking about in Middle River and Back River, they're working on an apprenticeship program because they've been around long enough that they can see what they need, and we're working with them on it. By the way, Baltimore County is the only other marine trades entity in the state. It's us and Baltimore County.
Do you guys work together?
Well, often, often. They're older than we are. That's why I said most people don't know that. They think like the boating center of Maryland is Annapolis, and it really started in Middle River. There's a whole lot of boat slips in Baltimore, and certainly Annapolis is now very, very large.
On the workforce development, are you considering, I think, didn't Marine Trades do a job fair at one point or a open house?
So the Marine Trades sponsors the Eastport Yacht Club Foundation's Career Day.
Okay, that used to be at the high school.
Yes. And they started it. They hosted it. I was your MC for the first one.
Okay.
We had these roundtable discussions where we got all these different professionals and we let the kids talk to them. And they speak. And we purposely got some younger people on the stage so they could relate to the kids. But yeah, that's Eastport Yacht Club Foundation continues to do that. And we sponsor it.
And I think that's a great opportunity for kids, especially. I mean, my son didn't know where the heck he wanted to go coming out of high school. And I mean, we were We went from the Air Force to graphic design to being a cop to being criminal justice.
A little bit of everything.
You know, and I'm like, dude, go to AACC, figure out what you need, and then we'll go from there. But to be able to bring students in and say, oh, so you mean I can do graphic design in the boat industry?
Yep.
You know, which is something you may not necessarily put one and one together when you did that. Oh, you know, I love working on things, but I've got that bad back, so I can't get under cars and be hunched over. Oh, so I can, you know, work on an outboard with, you know, standing up, whatever it may
be. Or I'm a girl, and that's a boy job. They look at them and go, no. We need everybody, and there's room for everybody. And any kind of job you can think of, from front desk to customer service to marketing to boat sales to running the travel lift to rigging on sailboats to rigging on fishing boats.
Right. And everything in between.
And everything in between. That's true. Yep.
Well, I'll tell you, what is the best way for businesses to become involved? And I think that anybody that has any kind of connection to the Bay or the Atlantic Ocean here in Maryland should be. Would it be just to go to the website, mtam.org?
Correct. And you're going to find that it's one of the least expensive, best investments you're ever going to make. Because, like I said at the beginning, we represent the recreational boating community in Maryland. We run events for our members. We run workforce developments to help them get more people in the door. We handle the legislature. We've got a prominent law firm that we work with as our lobbyist. We've got street cred in the legislature so that we can help your business.
Well, I mean, that's huge. Between the workforce development and the lobbying efforts that you have, I mean, if I'm running a marina and, you know, wherever, and all of a sudden there's an issue, I know I can come.
Call me.
Hey, John, this needs to be addressed.
Yep.
And see what we can do. Where are your top recommendations for boat accessible restaurants?
Well, I go to where's a lot of fun, right? So you've got Donnelly's and the Point on the Magothy River.
Uh-huh.
You've got several restaurants, take your pick, in right across the bay in Rock Hall, the old standby at Cantler's here in Whitehall.
Right, right.
You've got the old...
We've got Libby's and you've got...
Well, Libby's is terrific. What's the new one? I forget it. What's the name? In Chesapeake Harbor. I can never remember their name, the new one.
The Beacon.
Yeah.
Yep.
Beacon. Beacon is went there for years and the new name just escaped me. But that's terrific. You got great places in Galesville.
Pirates Cove and Stan and Joe's.
Can't beat them.
Where's your favorite in Rock Hall?
My favorite place in Rock Hall is the new Haven Harbor South Marina restaurant.
Oh, you say it's new.
It's new because it used to be for many years it was the Sailing Emporium. And it's right in Rock Hall Harbor, which is, if you're standing at Sandy Point, it's the part of Rock Hall that you can see.
Right.
It's a terrific, quick destination that makes you feel like you went somewhere. It took some work to arrive there, and then you just pull right up to the dock, and they've got a terrific new Admiral's Bar and food trucks, and they also serve, have a restaurant there.
Fantastic. Well, we will see you at the fall shows. Just for anyone that's listening, I want to put them on their calendar. The Powerboat Show is October 3rd through 6th, and the Sailboat Show is the 10th through the 14th. And John, thank you so much for your time and your advocacy. You've done, you guys are doing such great work for the Bay, for the people that use the Bay, and the businesses that, make it all run, I guess. But mtam.org is where you want to go. Check that out.
Great. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks for listening to this week's Local Business Spotlight. Please make sure to visit ionanapolis.net for all your local news, events, and opinion. And in case you haven't already, please subscribe to the Ion Annapolis Daily News Brief, where we bring you all the day's local news direct to your phone, tablet, or computer in about 10 minutes. It comes to you at 6 a.m. every Monday through Friday, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.